Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, fun CarCast today. We're going to talk with our friend Bud Brutzman, a super producer in the automotive space. He did Overhaulin' and Rides and lots of good shows. He's got a new show coming out on Discovery Plus that you are going to dig. It is going to be kind of fun. It's kind of a one-off miniseries, four-part miniseries. That is going to feature, let's just say, some Back to the Future memorabilia. It'll be fun. But before we get started, just a word from our friends at Dodge. You know, Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So check it out. Go to your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com today to schedule a test drive. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, with Bill Goldberg. How are you, buddy?
Getting better by the day.
Yeah? Are you getting some weather, or are you guys done with weather?
Oh, we're getting good weather. It's going to be 82 today.
That's good.
It's unbelievable.
I don't know what happened, but on the way here, it started to rain. So in Southern California,
that's apocalyptic in California.
We're getting a little bit of rain. And a lot of times we're like, yeah, it's nice. We could use a little bit of rain. But everything ends in some sort of disaster, so I couldn't tell you. Now it's going to be mudslides, flooding. I have no idea what, because it's going to rain for a few days. But anyway, for now, it's kind of nice. I know Sean is over at the other shop painting the BRE 510, and I don't think he likes the rain.
I wouldn't think so. No.
Nothing dries. There's moisture and cold, and you know, so not his best day, but getting it done. You know, we've got a few things going on the show today. We've got our buddy Bud Brutzman calling in or Zooming in or whatever the technology is we use today. But I kind of wanted to just follow up quickly on a story we were talking about last week. We were talking about Rimac, the electric car, you know, supercar company. And, you know, Porsche had a stake in the company. So VW Group, which owns Porsche, Bugatti, you know, Lamborghini, you know, Audi, they invested in Rimac through the Porsche arm. So Porsche has, it was like a 15.5% stake in the company. And they were talking about it more of an investment in the company, you know, whatever, $100 million, $180 million, whatever that ended up being. But the guys from Rimac kept saying, yeah, but we're still going to remain independent. We have other partnerships, you know, whatever. So anyway, Porsche made their investment. They increased their percentage from 15.5 to 24%. Good, right? Good money for Rimac, great partnership, maybe some tech transfer, you know, some things going on there. They can still work with their other partners. You know, but we kept talking about them, Rimac, buying Bugatti from the VW group. But we said, well, they're not going to spend the money to buy Bugatti. So VW's pitch was, hey, we'll give you Bugatti, but we want 49% of your company. So it sounded like the deal was done, but the Rimac guy's like, I can't give you a controlling stake of my company, right? You know. And by the way, I don't know if that meant 49% total or 49% on top of the 24% Porsche owns through, right? Because now
nobody knows except them.
Right. So from what I understand, the Bugatti Rimac deal is not done. Okay. But Porsche's investment in the company is done. So Porsche does have their 24% stake. Bugatti is still an independent company. I don't dislike the idea, but this is the weird business goings on that happens behind the scenes that makes everything a pain in the butt.
Just a high level chess game.
It is. But knowing that, it was like, I could see Bugatti's engineering, Bugatti's aerodynamics engineers, you know, those guys weighing in on Rimac and Rimac taking their electric drivetrain, which is incredibly powerful, and weighing in on Bugatti, right? And getting some combination. I'm not saying all the cars have to be electric, but there's hybrid versions like Koenigsegg has been doing.
It gets their foot in the door with an established product.
Yeah, and it seems pretty, you know, because the Bugatti Chiron Pure Sport that I drove recently, as we talked about, what makes that car as incredible as it is you get into it and it's as smooth and quiet and luxurious as anything on the road, any luxury high-end car on the road, and then it's just batshit crazy fast.
At warp speed, yeah.
Right. And, you know, we can get into a race car, you know, like a Senna and also be fast, but also that's meant to be very lightweight and no sound deadening, and you hear every little pebble pinging off the carbon fiber, and the seats are a little uncomfortable and everything's a little rough.
I like how you say that. They're a little uncomfortable.
They're a little uncomfortable. I don't know.
Weighing one of them is at 153 pounds.
It was jamming into my kidney. But I'm not saying Bugatti's better. I'm saying Senna did something different. McLaren did something different with it, and they made this crazy race car, which is super fun.
Completely apples to oranges.
But Bugatti's ability to make a car as refined and docile as it is and then be as crazy fast as it is when you lean onto it, that's probably the biggest achievement. You know, as the guy told me, he's like, yeah, when we were getting into Veyron, the boss said, I want a 200-mile-an-hour car that I can take the wife to the opera in later that same day and be as comfortable of a luxury car, not just a sports car or supercar. I don't know. It seems kind of like an interesting partnership.
As Gage walks by, sorry about that. When you drove the McLaren GT, how was the interior compared to the other McLarens? Was it more luxurious? Because to me, they were kind of going for something similar to what the high-end Bugattis offer, right? A very luxurious ride, roomy inside, you know, a little more plush than the others.
Yeah.
A better package.
I would say the McLaren GT did have a little bit more of the high-end sports car interior. You can tell they're going after like Porsche 911 for something like that. You know, but the 720S has kind of a sparse interior with a lot of Alcantara on the dash and stuff. And the GT was a little different. The GT had more leather, a little more soft touch going on, and you could see it in the door panels. You can see it, around the instrument cluster and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know that it was quite what Bugatti is doing, but Bugatti's interior is meant to be very clean as well. We talked about no infotainment system, no screen stuck up on the dash, nothing you're going to look into that car in 20 years from now and go, oh, remember when we were using touchscreens? Boy, were we idiots.
I'm just trying to find somebody. You can't really compare with the Bugatti by any stretch, but finding a manufacturer that's trying to do something similar, you know, at a tenth of the cost.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Like, who has? It's tough to tell. You maybe have to look a little at what a Koenigsegg may be doing, because I haven't really been in the. I haven't driven the Koenigsegg. I haven't been in it. I think I've like been in it at I went to the private viewing of an RM auction. It's like, hey, we've got the Agera or whatever it's called, I think it is, for the Koenigsegg. And he goes, check out the way the door opens, go ahead and sit in it. But I couldn't tell you, like, can you hear all the noise, you know, when you're driving? Do you get all that little, you know, the pebbles and everything like you do in the Senna? Or is it got more of the sound deadening?
How about the Pagani? You've been in one of those? I would say that compares as far as like going high-end, luxurious, opulent interior,
yeah,
but it's still much more of a sports car interior than
it does. But and the Bugatti and Pagani has like they often do like a raw linkage with metal and a lot of exposed carbon and stuff. So I don't know. I couldn't really say for sure. But, you know, I when I wrote up my description, you know, like on social media, my immediate thought was as refined as a Bentley, but as crazy as anything else out there, right? That was my initial thought. And obviously there was a relationship there, right? Bentley is also part of VW Group. And I was like, well, not exactly, but yes, you know, it didn't have like heated and cooled seats and all the squishy stuff and the bits and, you know, but the point is it was incredibly smooth for a car that had the capabilities that it had. Definitely smoother and more comfortable than anything out there. And I was just kind of thinking, without ever driving the Rimac, is that is not easy to do and achieve those performance numbers that they're doing. So if Bugatti could share some of that with Rimac and Rimac can share some of their electric drivetrain, you know, but you're talking about a car company that's only sold, I don't know, few hundred cars, you know, in the way of Rimac. You know, and the Bugatti Chiron is something like 500 models are going to be made, right? Like,
but it's exciting.
It is kind of exciting to see where that's going. Anyway, I think we touched on maybe when Alistair was here, we touched on
because it's all guessing now, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like you and I both drove Senna. We both drove 4GT. You know, we like 4GT, but 4GT is a little raw as well. You know, a lot of exposed carbon and stuff. You know, I was at Galpin Autosports and they had a client's all black GT. They added like some orange vinyl to it to give it a little splash of color. And they were doing a full paint protection wrap on it. And because they've done a bunch of these new GTs, they were very particular. They said, oh, we use the wrap here in this location and this location. And then on part of the side grills, we make a little like mesh grill, and we find that the mesh grill really kind of helps the inner like scallop in the door. You know, and so with the paint protection does some, but they're like, we add this little mesh grill and it has a good look, but it actually is functional. It's like, again, it's just time and experience on the job going, hey, you know, how do you protect these cars? How do you, you know, and that's kind of the thought behind, you know, Bugatti's experience coming in to a company like Rimac is... Mm-hmm. You know, you had your TRX wrapped. That was the first TRX that they wrapped, probably. But you know, with the paint protection film. But they've done enough vehicles to go. We have a pretty good understanding of what works
Template
and what doesn't
City.
Work.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get Bud Brutzman in here.
Definitely.
Bud, welcome to the show. Bud Brutzman, a longtime friend of ours, a producer, director, filmmaker, TV maker, overhauling, living the low life. So many shows, all the basically invented car shows as we know it now.
I like that. History is getting better. That's cool. I like it.
All around pain in the ass. One of our favorite pain in the ass, the guys out there in the business today.
This is scary for me because you guys are legitimately two of my closest friends in the industry and will follow me whenever I do dumb shit. I mean, if I'm building a garage or I'm doing this, it's always involving you two. So I got to be careful because I'm actually here to work on and promote a really big show I have, but we're going to get off on tangents where we're just going to get canceled or banned.
speaking of doing crazy stuff, not dumb stuff, exciting stuff. But in addition to being this super producer, you are into and have been for a long time off-road racing, done a lot with Ford, done a lot in Baja, Ford Raptor, a lot of the development stuff, like when we were testing Ford F-150, when we were testing Raptor, you were one of the guys out there that drove with them and filmed with them and during testing of these vehicles. Tell me about the Bronco. You guys were out recently with the actual, not Bronco Sport. You had new Bronco, and you were off road a little.
The Bronco, I was involved with all the Raptor development team for years, right? So and the F-150 EcoBoost. The Bronco ended up obviously was a product that they launched at the Baja 1000 recently down in Mexico. So it ran. I was not on the development team for that. That happened to be all my close friends, you know, Andrew Hendricks and Brad Lovell, Johnny Campbell and Cameron Steele actually did that wrap the Bronco R race team. They were part of the Bronco R race team, which I was not on, which I can tell you, I'm kind of happy though, because here's what happens in these development teams. And I did it with the F-150 EcoBoost, and I did it is they usually, it's funny. It's not as glamorous as people think. I actually, I remember,
what?
No, and I'll tell you why I gave, it's funny. So the year that I won the Baja 1000, I was going to come back and try to, compete for my second championship. And I gave up my seat because Ford called me early on and said, "Hey, you just won the Baja 1000. We want you to race this new development project we're coming out with." And this was like early on in the year. Right. And it's funny. And this is not and I love Ford. If you're listening, I apologize. This is not a bad thing. It just happens to be what it is. Right. So, and when I won, we were in a purpose-built race car that we're doing 100 miles an hour in and just bounce into the desert. And it's crazy. It's a race. So I call my sponsor, BF Goodrich, and I tell him, in the most obnoxious bravado way I can. It's like, Ford called me. And because I think, at that point, I think I'm Carroll Shelby or Ken Miles or something, right?
Right.
Sure. Ford calls me and they want me to race their new development project. So I'm out on the team this year. And they're like, "Are you sure you want to do that?" I'm like, "Yeah, Ford doesn't really call that often. You just get this, you're on a factory backed team and you're going to go racing." Like, okay. So we have meetings, we get logistic planning, we do our chase teams. And then I think it was about like July or August, we start having conversations about the vehicle and the race vehicle, what we're doing. And it ended up being, I don't know, they're going to hate me for this, but what it ended up being was so in Mexico, we have classes, right? There's trophy truck, trophy truck light, there's all these different classes. And so we entered a truck into the stock class. And we were racing, really not a truck, but we're racing a motor, right? And the motor was the Ford EcoBoost motor.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, the 3.6 twin turbo motor, right? So we're in class two, but Ford's mindset was, okay, this year we're going to race a stock F-150, all aluminum body. So we introduced the aluminum body, and we're introducing, and we want to see how the 3.6 twin turbo does. And I'm like, and so I literally just got out of a race car, and you're going to put me in a stock truck. Like, oh God, it was agony, by the way, because you're in a stock vehicle in the middle of the toughest race in the world, going 25 miles an hour. And I sat in the car, literally, I sat in the car and I'm the windshield's out of it. And I'm freezing my ass off going 25 miles an hour. And then, here's why the development projects are not fun, right? Because A, you don't want to let anybody down, right? So, and that's hard for guys like Bill and I, where they're just complete jackasses behind the wheel. So you don't want to let anybody down. So you just can't have, like, you can't be yourself. You got Ford executives, Ford engineers, there's PR teams, camera crews following you, and everybody's waiting you at pit stops. And they're also telling you, because this was a big problem at that point, because we brought one and it got stopped at the border. They're also telling you, "We don't have any replacement parts. These are all prototype parts." It happened to us on a Raptor too. So the engine stipend is prototype, and there's a red button on the dash, and everything's prototype. There's no replacement parts. Don't break anything. It's an experimental $3 million vehicle. So you're saying I can't slide this around a corner? Oh God, no, don't do that. You know, so I'm not really racing. I'm just a test mule at that point. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
The worst race of my life. I'm not even joking. And then to top it off, I'll stop talking. Is it my team won again? My other team, my BF Goodrich team, won it again. Right? They backed up the championship, and I lost. I'm like, it was awful. So yeah, that was
right. But you can't break the vehicle, and you have to finish it because Ford already has these ideas of like a huge marketing campaign, an ad campaign going, hey,
oh, yeah,
we secretly put the F-150 at Baja. Look how well it did. And it's so badass. The aluminum body held up. The EcoBoost is awesome. If you were upside down in a ditch like a turtle on its back, they'd be like, ah, you just screwed us. Not out of this race, but of the millions of dollars in our marketing campaign.
Yeah, I don't like the pressure. I'd rather just be in a race car and wad it up going as fast as I can. It's like, you know, it's crash or win. So, but the whole long and short is I wasn't involved with the Bronco development. That thing is, you know, we were involved on the Score side. We obviously sat down with Ford, made a deal. They became the official truck of Score. We did a bunch of launches down there. We filmed a bunch of stuff for not only the 2020, but the 2019 launch of the Raptor or the Bronco R, but also the 2020. So anyhow, enough of that. I like to race. It's kind of fun, but I like to go fast. Not so development isn't what it is. I'm not even joking. Development's not what it's cracked up to be. I did the same thing in when we raced the Raptor. It's like I raced the number one Raptor with a 6.2 motor. We had no replacement parts, stock everything. And it's like, oh, this is good. But you want to go fast because that 6.2 motor was pretty robust. And I was doing like 103, 105 through Laguna Salada dry lake bed. Scared out of my mind. I'm like, I'm going to hit something. This is going to end. This Raptor's never going anywhere. But it's cool to see him around because you're involved with the early part of it. So anyhow, that's it.
Yeah.
Bill, do you ever have that problem when Dodge gives you like a new car and they say, don't break it, and then you just stomp on it? What happens in that world?
They make them buy all the cars. Yeah. Oh, really? I think, is Bill frozen? I think Bill's frozen. Or he's in shock from your story. I can't tell. We'll give him a sec to come back there. But one of the things we also wanted to touch on was Chris is going to work on bringing Bill back. Was you've got this new program, and I didn't know what it was going to be. Your team is fantastic, Cynthia. She's like, hey, do you want to talk to Bud? He's doing a documentary on a DeLorean. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we had a guy in that did a movie about that, but sure. Let's see what it is. Welcome back, Bill.
Sorry about that, guys.
We're talking about the new show. We're talking about you can tell us what it is, but if it's a show, if it's a one-off thing, it's not a series, right? This is it's a 1 hour special on Discovery Plus?
No, it's a 4 hour, it's a 4-part special.
Okay, 4-part special.
Yeah, that's why I'm here. I didn't get to say hi to Bill. Hi, Bill.
What's up, Budley? Sorry about that.
Sorry, I was rambling on so much at my box.
No, I'm no reception in the boondocks. You know that.
I know.
It comes and goes.
I was rambling on about my racing stories. I didn't get a chance to say hi to you and see what's going on.
All good.
All right, so you've got this 4-part series, but this isn't the history of DeLorean. This is what this isn't, you know, because there's documentaries. There was the reenactment documentary with Alec Baldwin, which was good. It was a great story. It was a great little film about the DeLorean. It was fun to chat with those guys who made that as well. But you're doing something different and having a little bit of fun with it. This is for Discovery Plus, right? Their streaming service. I believe March 15th it comes out. So very, very soon you guys can bookmark this or find it on the streaming platform. But tell us what it is.
So I got to sit down, and then I learned so much about it. But I got to sit down with Christopher Lloyd, right? So Doc Brown. So
sure.
And to me, he's not Doc Brown. To me, he's Jim Nagatowski from Taxi, right? So I'm sitting down with a drunk reverend, right? I sit down with him, and I'm like, we are working on some projects. Like, what kind of projects you want to do with this amazing actor who I've idolized and watched on TV for so long? And he happened to be, you know, Doc Brown in one of the most successful science fiction franchises in history. So I say, you know, let's track down all the really expensive DeLoreans, right? Let's find out where they're at. And really how it evolved, and he was fascinated by what people do, and they have him sign the car. And then it really kind of evolved into what happened to all the vehicles that were in the movie, right? Because we all know that movie cars, like it or not, are always very, sought after, have really good pedigree, right? So how many movie cars were there? How many did they use, and where are they at, right? So that's kind of the started early on. Then when we sat down with Discovery Channel, they're like, okay, so this sounds like something for Josh Gates. I'm like, oh my God, that'd be great. Cause Josh Gates on Expedition Unknown is phenomenal. So then it morphed into, and Discovery Channel is great about making, always pushing me to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they're like, okay. So really what it turns out to be is a 4-part series where Josh Gates and Christopher Lloyd are on a hunt to hunt down and buy, that's how it's kind of evolved, to hunt down and buy one of the screen used DeLoreans to gift to Michael J. Fox for the foundation. Right.
Okay.
And then what really, really kind of, you know, developed out of it was this thing called fan fiction, where we just ended up just bumping into every single person you could imagine along the way, you know, Goldie Wilson and then the creator, Bob Gale. And then we're finding these collectors and talking to these collectibles. And so this whole thing is kind of morphed into kind of a fan paradise. We had Easter eggs and we got Strickland. Yeah, Strickland, the principal, he's in our thing.
So he's in the trailer, by the way. We could give away. He's in the trailer. So,
yeah.
And of course, as much as I loved him in that film, I always think of him as Top Gun. You know, I think of him as Top Gun as well. And he's great in that.
Well, his name is James Tolkien, right? And what's weird is there's a, and it's, you know, life, you know, art imitates life all the time. So, we were obviously hunting down a bunch of people to try to be in it. And then we're like, and this sounds terrible. You know, first of all, it's like, Strickland can't be alive, right? I mean, and the art imitated life is there's a funny little thing in the movie. And I actually did a line for the movie when I picked him up from the airport. So there's a line in the movie where Marty McFly, says, you know, he says, that guy ever aged? Did he ever have hair? Because he looks the same that he did in 1955 as he did in 1985. And when we picked up at the airport at 92 years old, he looked exactly the same he did, you know, 1985. Yeah. So you fast forward like 35 years, like, you look exactly the same as you did. It's like, well, yeah. And he's 92. He was in New York. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I was hunting him down. Doesn't have his not even joking with everybody. So his publicist is dead. His agent is dead. His manager is dead. Right? I'm trying to hunt all these people down. And I finally got his number and I call him and I'm like, hey James, this is what I'm doing. He's like, ah, okay. Yeah, that sounds fun. I'll do it. And then, so we book his flight and then he calls me back and says, oh yeah, am I getting paid for this? I'm like, which is why some of these guys like need managers and agents. And I'm like, yes, of course you're getting paid. You're going to come do a scene and it's going to be, you're reprising your role. It's like, oh, that's great. And he gets on a plane at 92 years old, dead set in the middle of the pandemic, which is the hardest thing that we've ever done. Got into Universal, did his line. It's those little surprise moments for us, even though, cause it was really weird to film him for 30 minutes. Put him back in the plane, take a nappy nap, and then send him away. But it was amazing to be able to work with that guy. And you know, I spent months and months with Christopher Lloyd and traveled around the United States with Christopher Lloyd. And it's just amazing.
But that's an incredible feat too. He's not a young man. He's fantastic in the clips that I've seen, but you're right. You didn't go to Christopher Lloyd and go, hey, I've got this idea. Just come to a studio in Hollywood. We'll grab a green screen. We'll get you in and out in 48 hours, right? Like, you can work 3 hours a day for 4 days. We'll make it super easy. You said, no. We got to travel all over the place.
Yeah. So Christopher Lloyd's 81, just turned. I was with him on his 82nd birthday in New York. Sat down. It was me, Josh Gates, and him have dinner, which is, I'll never forget. It's one of those things like, I had dinner with that guy once. So he's 82 years old. And there was always, Bill knows me pretty well, every hotel we went to, there was only two people in the gym, me and Chris Lloyd. Chris was on a bike. And I'm like, he's 82. He's awesome. And he's you know, it's everything you want. He's just sitting there, you know, what is it? He would ask me a 10,000. I'd pick him up in the morning at the hotel because I just became personally responsible to make sure that I gathered him along with us.
Yeah.
And he would ask me questions about, you know, today's work. What are we doing? What's the scene look like? And it was always like, you gotta you're playing yourself. It's not a character. You're not playing Jim Nabokovsky. You're kind of playing a exacerbated version of yourself, which is, an older Hollywood star on the search to go back to your franchise. And once he got into who he was going to be, it was awesome. I mean, they're doing their character stuff. It was great.
So explain the format to us on this. This is sort of like a a kind of a scripted reality show. Like you really are looking for the cars and bits of the story, but you're not just walking around blindly doing this, right? Like this isn't a reality show for the sake of reality show. There's kind of a scripted element. There's some fun elements. You know, like you said, there's props. It's I don't know, like almost reenactments, but that's probably not the right term. How would you explain it?
Okay, so it's not scripted. So that's terrible. You bite your tongue. You can't use scripted reality. You know, we have outlines. Like we're gonna go. We have to take the audience on a journey, of course, right?
Formatted reality.
Yes, formatted reality. Matt, not scripted reality.
I was gonna say formatted.
It's like
reality.
Saying wrestling's fake. Matt. That's a
full wait a minute.
Yeah, Matt.
Damn it. All right. So formatted reality. It's not scripted.
Formatted reality. We obviously have to, you know, figure out what we're doing and what we have to do. And there's a lot of twists and turns in the show itself. But it's really a treasure hunt. And again, I call it fan fiction because that's a term that I've learned. We're trying to do a service to this iconic thing, right? And I left out the biggest thing. It was like, in order to even get this project off the ground, I had to go, you know, to a successful place or whatever, an interesting neighborhood in LA. I don't want to give up where he lives, and meet with Bob Gale, the creator of Back to the Future, and get his blessing. So I literally drove up to his gigantic house, if you can imagine, rang the
It was door. Right next door to yours.
No, he doesn't live in my neighborhood. It's over off of PCH, ish. So I wish he was next to me. It'd be great. It'd be much easier. So I rang the doorbell. I sat down with Bob Gale, the creator, and I kind of pitched him on what we're doing and what we're having. And I was teed up a little bit by Christopher Lloyd. And Bob Gale's like, yeah, this sounds fun. And he was incredibly instrumental in everything that we're doing, right? And I was, very nervous because it's a large property. And he's like, I'm going to let everybody know that I'm working with you on this and tell everybody. So he sends an email. I'm not joking. I have the email. He sends an email out to Steven Spielberg, Robert Zemeckis, the head of Universal Franchise. Like, this is Bud Brutzman. Here's what we're doing. We're working on this project. I want to let you know this has happened. This has happened. And then I have to kind of go everything through that, those doors. But Bob Gale opened up every single door. We were allowed to have fun with his characters and play with his characters some and kind of play with his thing. And I talked to him this morning. He's really into it. It's a good fan service for what he did. And it's amazing for what they did too.
Do you remember 11 minutes ago when you said you got a call from Ford and you thought that was the best day ever? Well, how about the email that goes out to Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg and half of the Hollywood executives going, hey, I'm working with Bud on this Back to the Future thing. You guys should all play ball.
I doubt Spielberg or Zemeckis. Zemeckis, who turned us down, because I wanted to get Zemeckis in as a part, right? Like, hey, can you? And Spielberg turned us down too because he was too busy working on 42nd Street. I had a part for both of them. I wrote a part in there for both of them. Like, hey, you could do this part. And they're like, no.
No.
No, we're not doing that.
The rubber hits the road right here.
Yeah, they're like, no. I mean, I think it was like the email I got back from Spielberg's people were, he spent 2.5 years working on the live action movie for 42nd Street and he's not taking on any new projects. Okay, that's fine. I get it. But it doesn't matter. I mean, like I said, Bob Gale is the 800-pound gorilla when it comes to this franchise, and he'll kind of allowed us to, you know, play in the world and working with franchise. You'll see there's movie clips, behind the scenes clips, and you know, we may or may not see Michael J. Fox, which I don't want to give up until we.
I was looking for that in the trailer. I have a few other questions, but if you've got time to stick with this, I'm gonna hit this. This read from our friends over at Dodge. You know, Dodge has officially opened the orders for the new 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat. It's the most powerful SUV ever. I've looked up the numbers on this thing, 710 horsepower. That's being conservative if they're running the same engine that's in Bill's truck. I can tell you that for sure.
Yes.
This is a full-size SUV, a three-row SUV that does 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds and runs like 1150s in the quarter mile. And so exclusive for 2021, it has this new aggressive exterior styling, new interior, and a driver-centric cockpit. It really looks good. you know, and all buyers will receive a full day of pro instruction at the Bondurant High Performance Driving School. We've all been there. It's been fantastic to do.
Yeah, they call that the Kevin Hart package, right? They give you this gigantic card. You got to make sure you know you can drive it.
Yeah, you got to know what you're doing over there. Well, Bill went to the Bondurant School with Kevin Hart and all and a bunch of the guys. and they had a great time over there. You know, Dodge is ranked number one in initial quality and best driver appeal by appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So congratulations to those guys. So check it out. Go to Dodge.com to schedule your test drive or visit your local Dodge dealer. Okay, so how many DeLoreans were in the movie? Were in the I mean, there's a franchise, so I don't know where it goes from there, but I guess we're really talking about the first film. How many were used in the first film? Were you looking for one from the first film or just from the franchise?
Well, the good part of the quest is the team of Josh and Chris don't really know which one they're looking for, and they think it's the one for the first film, so that's where we end up. So there were seven screen used DeLoreans for the franchise. Seven. So they have to track down all seven.
Okay. That's actually way less than I thought. You're talking about several films, and yes. I would have thought, I don't know, double that, you know, 14 of these things across three films. Right. But yeah, I guess they don't.
It's not like Hooper.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you got to remember, and this movie wasn't supposed to go anywhere, right? So I think they had like two or three for the first film, and then they just literally the A car, which was now in a museum, but the A car was used for all three films, right? They didn't have like 40 of them. There wasn't that many stunts necessarily, as Bill just said. It's not like Hooper. But yeah, you're right. I think they were a little conservative on like, hey, we need seven cars, especially with how big the franchise was. But I've been talking to Bob a lot about it. Like, you know, they hated this film. They were going to change the name of the film, the very first one. They moved up the date. They're like, whatever, stupid time travel film. And, you know, Spielberg wants to do it. And this new director, Zemeckis, and this guy, Bob Gale. And then all of a sudden it exploded.
Yeah.
But you're right. They should have had 40 of them, but they didn't.
They didn't. But also the film's successful because they're charming characters. You're right. Christopher Lloyd, Michael J. Fox, like they were all fantastic in it and had fun with it. So without giving away all of these seven cars, it seems there's a very famous story that Seth MacFarlane owns one of the original cars. And this story has come up very publicly, so hopefully not ruining anything with you, because when he did A Million Ways to Die in the West, there's a scene where he's running and he opens a barn door and he sees Doc Brown with the car there, and then he closes the door, and that's it. It was like a little cameo, and I was told that was Seth's car. Is there any truth to Seth having one of the seven?
So it is true that Seth owns a time machine.
Okay. Right?
So Seth absolutely owns a time machine for sure. But it is not one of the seven used cars.
Yeah, he can't afford a real one.
Well, no, he can afford anything. He can buy every one of them, right? he can buy Back to the Future if he wanted to. And Bill and I do this all the time, and that's where the provenance comes in. It really doesn't have to do with the money. There's a lot of people who can own that certain vehicle. It's just being in the position where you're in the right place at the right time, and that vehicle pops up with provenance and you get it. So we kind of know who owns all of them. We kind of know where all of them are at, but that's definitely not one of them. Okay. I'm sure if a real one pops up, he'll buy it.
Oh man. Are you going to go down a path now with Discovery and going, hey, let's do this same show with a Road Warrior Maverick, and let's do the same show with a, you know, with a Gone in 60 Seconds, GT500.
Well, I talked to the answer to that is yeah. Like, let's hope. Right.
Well, of course. Why wouldn't you? You're like, hey.
I have been talking to a few people in Gone in 60 Seconds, about the hunt for the Eleanor. I won't tell you which star of the show I've been dealing with right now. But yeah, why not? I mean, there's such a, you know, those cars, right? Cause there's all kinds of people, like even on the Eleanor, there's a million of them out there. And which one is the original? How many Eleanors were used? And by the way, where's the original Eleanor from the film, right? Does Michael Bay own it, or Michael Mann own it, or whoever, you know, who owns the original?
Right. But now you're also talking about authenticating the real cars, right? Because there's so many reproductions and it's a cool car and whatever. And there's been all these licensing agreements and stuff. But when you go to find a real car, how do you figure out it's a real? Some of them are going to be easy, but not all of them will be easy. You know, honestly, a hero car would be more difficult to identify than, you know, some of the stunt cars that have, you know, a terrible engine and just suspension or whatever, you know?
Not really. I'll give you, because they're the two most famous cars in the world. We'll do a test for you, Matt, right? with the two most famous hero cars in the world, right? One's a stunt car, one's a hero car. All right. And does everybody know the difference between a stunt car and a hero car? So the hero cars are usually the A car, what's called a pitcher car, which doesn't get slid in sideways, doesn't get jumped or anything like that. It's really just for all the beauty shots. You keep it really pretty. That's what the A car. The B car, the stunt car, generally gets just wadded up and destroyed and slid sideways and rolled downhill. So those cars are harder to find because they've been the shit beat out of them. So the two most famous ones, right, are 558 and 559. What am I referring to?
558 and 559. Most famous car. I don't know. Oh, I'm going to say probably the most famous car would be Bullet Mustangs. Yeah,
right.
From
right.
Bullet.
So 558 are the three last digit of the VIN number that Steve McQueen used. They just, by the way, disappeared for 30 or 40 years, and they just found it last January, right? So that's 558. Now, that's the A car, the Steve McQueen-driven A car. He drove both of them, by the way. But the A car, the pitcher car, the 558. And all of us who are collectors, or, you know, even I have done this, I don't know, 60 times in my life, right? You roll up on a 68 Mustang, some idiot's got it for sale for $2,000, and you say, pop the hood, and you look at it, and you look at it, and you're like, and if it's got a 558, you try to give him $3,000 cash and run away with it. Never found it.
Exactly. Never happened.
Never happened. So, but 559, the interesting story, and it's out and around too, and I saw it recently. 559 was the stunt car that the stunt car that somebody at Warner Brothers said, okay, this is a stunt car for Bullet, get rid of it and crush it. So what happens is it gets handed off to person to person to person, and then some guy takes it and he's supposed to crush it, and said he sells it to somebody in Mexico. So literally 559, and I've been to Baja, Mexico 7 billion times, and I've raced through all these things, and I have looked at chicken coops and I flew over in helicopters and go, hey, there's a little car. So 559, one of the second most famous cars in the world, was found in Mexico. They were literally, to pull the stories together, literally bought by a Latin guy who owns a body shop. Him and his partner were making Eleanor recreations, and they were going to take this 1968 Eleanor, or this 1968 Mustang, turn it into an Eleanor recreation. They start working on it, and then they had this little tiny little devil pop into his shoulders like, check the VIN number. So he checks the VIN number, and the VIN number says 559. So they send it off to Marty from Marty Report and said, hey, I got this 68 Mustang. We got halfway torn apart. It's got some really – and I saw it, by the way. It's got some really funky stuff on it. Like there's holes in the package tray for cables, and it's got interesting thing, armature underneath the rocker panels to slide in camera equipment and stuff like that, because I saw the whole car. And it's like, there's something weird about this car. Sure enough, Marty Report comes back. It's 559, and it's the second Bullet car. It's like, what the hell? But that's it. It's interesting. So the answer to your question is, generally, through purchasing orders and stuff like that, we knew in 1968 when they did Bullet, we knew from the purchasing order from where they got transferred to Steve McQueen, then had those two cars transferred to a body shop in Hollywood. We had the back tail panel blacked out and had some modifications done to it, all the badges pulled off it and kind of McQueened it. We know what the VIN numbers are. Most people know what those VIN numbers. Those are purchased things. You just don't, you know, unless you create them from scratch. You know what the base cars are. I'd like to do a Smoking the Bandit too. Before Bert died, I was talking about doing it. I would love to find out because I have one. Bill has one. I mean, who doesn't have a Bandit? Well, you probably don't have one, Matt, do you?
No.
Oh, like, but I love it. Yeah, you see my Bandit, but it is mine's actually Bert's that we built for him 10 years ago, but it's not one from the movie.
Right. I remember that car. So let me ask you this from the production side of things. The way these cars go down historically, like this is supposed to get crushed and this one's lost, this falls off a trailer and this one's broken to a million pieces, and now we've got to go on this adventure and authenticate and find. Are we beyond that? Is that never going to happen again? Like, have we figured that out as we make new films? Like, we don't know if a film or a show is going to be successful or not. But, like, for example, like, hey, where's the red Subaru from Baby Driver, that film? Like, that film was a sleeper hit, and we've gone on to talk to the stunt drivers and everything on that film, but is that in a museum somewhere now? Does the studio own that thing in a museum, or are they still like, we screwed up three Subarus, just throw one in the garbage, and then maybe just end up in Mexico? Like, we should know better, right?
Well, I'll speak for Bill and I. I don't think,
it's a little bit of both.
I don't think anybody cares about that particular Subaru.
not yet. That's... We don't, but we don't know what's going to happen, right?
But
there's three guys out there that like, yeah,
there's Bucky Lassick and maybe Ken Block and maybe Travis Pastrana. I really want to find out where that Subaru is at, right? Otherwise, like, who cares? But
and
no,
Matt.
Yeah, and Matt. I'll be honest with you. I'm working on, like I said, the Gone in 60 Seconds one, which is a little bit older, but also I want to work on one for the Fast and the Furious franchise, right? So you start thinking about it, and it's weird how life is, right? So the Fast and the Furious franchise, what happened to all the original cars in the first film? And you got to remember, they're way more iconic now, because who would not want to see the Skyline that Paul Walker was driving?
Right.
Or the Charger,
right.
The Dodge Charger that Vin Diesel was driving. And where are those at? You really think they're sitting in the back lot of Universal? And if they are, by the way, which is where that, I mean, so it's, I'll give you a really example. Absolutely, I think that, you know, the studios and everybody understand, but if you've ever been on the tram ride at Universal, it's for us, I weep, right? I cry. Because they literally go past this, like, this grove of trees, what looks like a shitty bus stop, and there's like Magnum PI's car, there's Biff's car from Back to the Future, they're all just rotting, and they got a family of raccoons and maybe like a couple snakes and some crickets and stuff like that. They're living in these cars. You're like, you got to be. And I know when I went to Universal Cities, you know, 10 times, and I saw the car from Back to the Future, the real one. That's where it sat. That car sat there. The original A car sat at that little. They're not inside. They're sitting outside. Like, so it's hard. They just think it's a stupid prop.
That's it. Honestly. It's a movie prop. That's it. They don't need it anymore.
They don't need it. It's sitting there.
They don't care.
No. And what we know as car people is like, wait a minute. If I take that car, and by the way, someone did, right? So someone smarter than us 4 or 5 years ago, his name, Joe Walzer. I mean, they actually already had this documentary. They did a documentary called Out of Time. And somebody convinced Bob Gale and Universal, like, let us take that car. It is a piece of iconic history. It's rotting to death. You know, it's you know, a rat farm right now, and restore it. And it took them 2 years, and they fully restored it. And now that car is sitting in a museum, and I'm telling you, I've been in it. I sat in it. It's like, it's a holy grail. The thing is, like, amazing looking. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, you have to have an appreciation for the automobile, first of all, and then you have to have appreciation for what that vehicle means and what it does for the franchise. In all the franchise, I am a big Mustang fan. That's not really a secret, but I would honestly love to find out where the original Eleanors are and how many they made. Yeah, and then we could hunt down the original Charger. How much? Let's talk about this. How much would Bill pay for the original Vin Diesel Charger in the Fast and Furious franchise, the original one that didn't pop the wheelie?
Bill's building a garage. He doesn't have any money.
I'm not a Vin Diesel fan.
He's not a Vin Diesel fan. You can't have two big
Charger organs. Fan, but I'm Charger. Not a Vin Diesel fan.
All right,
it would remind me of him.
Yeah. We fumigate it and we take all the
take that out.
Now the Charger in Bullet.
Oh, yeah. Where's that at, by the
Where's
way?
Where's that?
That's the holy grail for me.
Yeah, that 68 Bullet that has 75 hubcaps. Where's that thing out? I've talked to it. Now, here's the thing. I was doing a Bullet documentary trying to hunt down all the cars. This is kind of how my brain works anyhow. And there's allegedly a guy who says he has it, and there's a couple people who restore him every once in a while and pop up at shows and say, this is the original one, take a picture by it. But no one can verify it because that car was obviously twisted and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, where is that original one from Bullet? That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't understand the animosity between the Vin Diesel thing. So
no, it's not animosity. It's just I'm an old school guy, and the original Bullet Charger is definitely the car.
That's a different
generation.
Yeah.
For the appreciation for the Fast and Furious stuff.
Yeah, and where's the Challenger from The Vanishing? You know, where's that?
Sure, yeah.
Mannix.
Yeah.
Where's it? What was it, a Dart?
No, it was a child, the white Challenger? That's like a 71.
No, but I'm talking about, remember the TV show Mannix?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He had a green Dart,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
And here's the thing is, as they get put, these things get put in and they just embed in our minds, right? They'll drag you in. I'm like, I want Rockford's Firebird that he had.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's ever going to stop. And I don't know if these iconic cars get thrown in these films and you, it stands out to guys like us and they mean something, you know, provenance is provenance. So anyhow, mm-hmm. We go down there, but it was probably the biggest film franchise we could work on that has, I mean, you can't name another car other than maybe a Bandit or something like that. But the DeLorean is so. Now, do you guys know the backstory? So the backstory, I'll tell you about this. This is very fun. It's gonna make fun of everybody, but that's okay. At least not Dodge, one of your big sponsors will make fun of Ford. So I'll give up a little secret. It's not that big of a secret, but I'll give you a secret. So in the original first draft of the script, which I have, the time machine was a refrigerator. And Doc Brown had to load the refrigerator in the back of an old Ford pickup. Right. And then he would get into it and he'd run a cable. Not joking. This was the original. He'd run a cable out to White Sands, New Mexico, where they're testing nukes. And then he would be able to harness the nuclear energy into his time machine. And that would send him back to time. Right. So as the studio is beating the crap out of him for budget and whatnot, as the story goes, Robert Zemeckis comes up and said, wouldn't it be better if Doc Brown built the time machine into a vehicle and then that way he can take it wherever he needs to go. Right. So that became then at the time. And I talked to Bob Gale about this, like at the time, John DeLorean's car company was defunct. He was going through a huge trial, right, for the cocaine trafficking stuff.
Yeah,
so
it
was very popular. They literally, and I've done this before, they literally thought like, oh, we're going to get some good press out of this. I don't know what they were thinking. Like this guy's going to jail which by the way, he didn't, but this guy may be going to jail. It's a trial of the century. He built this really cool, iconic, stylish looking car. Let's make it a DeLorean. So they made this decision to make it a DeLorean. So now they're going into production and Bill and I, we can commiserate on this kind of thing. They're going into production. They've got this, which turns out to be one of the greatest decisions in cinematic history, which is they're going to make the time machine out of a DeLorean, which is amazing. So they're heading into it. So a knock comes on the door in production and in walks kind of the product placement guy from Universal Studios. And if you don't know the story, it's pretty funny. And I've got a t-shirt that says it. So, and Bob Gale, if you haven't met him, he's genius. So the product placement guy comes and says, hey, got a deal from you, right? There's a bunch of money in it, right? 1984. There's a bunch of money in for it. Ford wants to give us money, and I'll give you some money for your production if the time machine is a Mustang. So okay. Screw the DeLorean. They're not even a car company anymore, and they're not going to give us any money. And you're going to be prone to this stupid DeLorean car, and the guy's in jail, and it doesn't look good. Ford's going to give you a 1984 Mustang, and that becomes a time machine. Bob Gale, it's a famous story. Bob Gale says, Doc Brown doesn't drive a fucking Mustang.
Nice.
Okay.
And the guy, like he said, the guy's like tail between his legs, walks out the door, and the deal never was made because Ford was trying to get into it. He's like, Doc Brown doesn't drive a fucking Mustang.
He drives a DeLorean.
Yeah.
With a Ford engine.
With a Ford.
No, I don't know. It's not.
I think it's a Buick or something. Yeah, like, or a Fiat engine or something like that.
The line in the film when he's like, oh, the stainless steel body is what we need for time travel. Like it was good. It made sense.
It was perfect.
At the time. Yeah. It worked out good.
And it's space age. It's got the gullwing doors and it fits the comic book. I mean, just it's ridiculous. If you have a Ford Mustang that goes back to 1955, people are like, what the hell is that? Especially in 84.
Yeah, but if they would have used the SVO Mustang with the four cylinder and the double wing in the back and the hood scoop, and it would have made it iconic for sure. But then the wing would have been gone, and you'd have to put the food processor in the front and cause the engine's in the front. And I don't know, actually, I think the DeLorean ended up working better. I'm sure as they storyboarded it out, you're right, with the gullwing doors and the engine in the back, that it made the most sense.
Not a food processor. That's a coffee grinder. It's a coffee bean grinder.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, so we're running out of time here, but March 15th on Discovery Plus, the streaming network. You guys check it out. What's the actual name of the program?
So this our program, our special, or our series is called Expedition Back to the Future. So it kind of combines the two big franchises, the Josh Gates' Expedition Unknown, and then we got permission to use the logo and everything from Back to the Future, which I couldn't believe, but we got to combine those two. So Expedition Back to the Future.
All right, guys, check that out on Discovery Plus. Before we wrap it up, what's next? What else is on the docket?
Oh, I have a new show I'm working on called Fully Torqued. May have a couple big things going on with Bill, may not. We got a lot of stuff happening. I don't know. It's rebuilding the business and kind of the world is kind of opening up a little bit. But hey, can I take you on a tour or something? You want to see something super cool before
yeah.
we go?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, it'll be kind of bitching. Hold on. Got to walk through the garage a little bit. Walk to the garage. There's the studio. There's the Bandit, right?
So yeah, the there Bandit. It is.
But I might have one of these.
Look at that. He's Hold got on. A DeLorean time machine.
Oh, you got to have kind of have one of these.
Look at that.
Yeah, firing it up.
Classic.
Yeah, got to have one of these. Yeah, you kind of get a little bit of addicted and you kind of want to own a time machine, I guess. So that's this is the one of the ones from the show. So it's kind of cool.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, good luck with the show, Budley. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Have fun with that car and enjoy it. We're looking forward to it. March 15th, Discovery Plus. Check it out. And that's it. We're going to wrap things up here as well. So give us a follow. I'm on social media at Moderator. You'll see some cool stuff we've been posting up there. Later this week, I think with Adam, we're going to talk about the Toyota Supra, the 2.0, the four-cylinder Supra that I've been driving, which is surprisingly good. And you can follow Bill. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter. He's Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. Follow that. He's going to have some more stuff about the projects he's working on posting very, very soon. I got a little sneak peek. That's all I'm going to tell you. And it looks fantastic. So until next time, keep the air in the spare, in the bag, and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Thanks so much for listening. A word from our friends at Geico. You own your home or you rent your home, and we know it can be a lot of work, but you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. As you know, Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy, and that's a good thing because we already have so much to do around our homes already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.